You're listening to another top-rated radio show on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Welcome to the American Hour with your host, Commander Tom Garcia, on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Commander Tom Garcia, and of course, I'm joined by my lovely co-host, Paula Lozon-Osman. How are you today, Paula?
Doing excellent. About 92 up here today. Really nice beach weekend this weekend.
Oh, awesome. Well, we finally got some rain down here. We've been having this drought, and then it's been hot again the last couple of days. But in any case, and I haven't broadcast this. It's been a while. I don't even know how long it is. I had a guest host last week. Warchick was on, and I guess that went pretty good. And I want to let people know about some upcoming shows that we've got going on. This Wednesday, we've got Craig Sawyer. Now, if you go to the website, USARadionetwork.com, and to my page, you'll see the upcoming guests we've got for this week. We've got Craig Sawyer coming on. He's a Navy SEAL. He's been in several different shows on the History Channel, and I think he was the Maximum Warrior in Maxim magazine. The guy is one tough guy, one badass, I got to say that. And he's doing work with the Wounded Warriors right now. It's the Wounded Warrior in Action Foundation, if you want to go take a look at those folks. But they're in Georgia as we speak, or headed to Georgia as we speak, because they're going to take some wounded warriors out driving some race cars, some real, you know, Formula 5 or race cars or whatever, stock car. I don't think it's stock car, and I don't have all the details. But I think that's going to be put on a show. And then he's working on a project with, again, I think the History Channel, to put together a show on taking wounded warriors out on hunting expeditions. So it's all great stuff for the Wounded Warriors, and we've got, you know, great channels like the History Channel that are interested in covering this kind of stuff. Now, the way I connected with him is through Jill Trammell, and she's doing the PR work for that Wounded Warrior group. And she was originally who I wanted to have come on the show, but then she talked to me about Craig. So I think they'll both be on Wednesday. And then and I'll come back to some of the stuff we're going to talk about and some other things with those two, but immediately following then, Mary Francis, who's running for state legislature. Again, take a look at the website and give you information and a link to, I believe, the press release, and go to her Facebook page, Mary Francis for Florida Congress, and you can find out more about her. But she's going to be on for about half an hour talking to us. And then we've got a gentleman coming on from California with the Conservative Party. Not really so much to talk about the Conservative Party, but to talk about what the government has done to job creation in this country and what it's doing right now to the manufacturing sector and some of his solutions on how to get out of it. So it's going to be kind of a long show, but it's going to be a great show on Wednesday. And then when I go on vacation in a couple weeks, I'll be gone for a couple weeks, so I've got Jill and Craig, the Navy SEAL, are going to be filling in for me for the 2 weeks. So Monday and Wednesday, they'll both be broadcasting. And one of the shows they're going to do, well, actually, they're going to do a series of shows on the TSA whistleblowers and what's been coming out about our airport security, and they'll talk about some other issues as well. But that's kind of be kind of the big show, or the big series is the TSA whistleblowers. So you're going to have Jill there, who's a big proponent of veterans groups and organizations, and she has her own sort of veteran support group and wounded warrior type group that she does online, and has been doing that for some time, and now a part of Wounded Warriors in Action Foundation. And then, of course, you've got Craig Sawyer, call sign Sawman, who's going to be helping her, co-hosting with her for the four shows, so you don't want to miss that. And I'll get more information out on the website about some more details and specifics, but be looking for that. Then on Thursday, we're doing a special broadcast. I'm going to talk about we're going to be talking about her article today, but D.E. Dyer. Let me make sure I get her name right. I just spoke with her yesterday, Paula, but she came out with a great article called It's Not the Entitlements, It's Discretionary Spending, and J.E. Dyer. And I'll tell you a little bit more about her maybe later, but we'll get into her article. Great article. It's the same kind of stuff, Paula, that you and I are always talking about. The government. The government's just getting too big and costing us too much money. And we're not talking about the military or Social Security or Medicare. We're talking about simply the government itself. It is just growing out of control and at a much higher rate than any of our entitlement programs. And that's what her article is about. Really fantastic article. So we'll talk a little bit more about that. And, of course, we were scheduled to have Margie Padgett on the show today, who's running for Volusia County Commissioner at Large, but she apparently may not make it. And our friend to tell us about that, Dick Birnbach, is here. Dick, how are you doing today?
Doing good, Tom. Nice to hear you again.
Yeah, thanks for coming on the show. Now, you had arranged to get Margie on, and I know Margie well, and the reason I like having Margie on the show is not so much where she's running for office, but it's what she knows about local and county governments and spending and taxation and accountability. And she's a great speaker about these subjects. She knows a lot and is always I'm always learning stuff from her about local government issues. So she's great. It applies to anybody in the country. And but it looks like she's not going to. She works for a living like the rest of us. So, as a real estate agent, I guess she had a pop-up closing. And in this real estate market, Dick, when you have a closing, you want to go to closing. Because you need to sell a house and make.
She is a realtor, and she notified me later this morning that she might not make it. She wasn't sure yet, but then about 1 o'clock, she notified me that the closing was going to take place about 3:30, and there was just no way she could make it. And like she said, you have to work when you can work.
That's right. Yeah, it's absolutely right. We need lots of people in the country, more people with that attitude. Got to work. And, of course, how many times have I either not made it to a show because I had a late flight, just got in late, or I had to get on a little bit late, Paula, when you had to run things. So that stuff happens. In any case, Paula, what do you think is sort of the biggest news going on right now? If you were to turn on any station or look online, what do you think is the hot news? What are you seeing as the hot news?
Oh, the president coming on this morning and telling everybody that it's just not going to happen with the debt ceiling and, the whole nine yards, and he's not going to offer an extension and did no deal on raising the government's debt limit if Republicans won't compromise. And That's just been all over the news,
Yeah, I'd agree with you. What do you think, Dick? What have you seen out there?
I have to agree with her. It seems like all they can talk about is how they can spend our money. People don't seem to realize our government at all levels has no money. The money they have is ours. And that's what they're spending.
Yeah, I agree. Well, let's take a look at one unique aspect of the debt ceiling that's been bantered around, and that is the 14th Amendment. All of a sudden, the libtards out there who hate the Constitution and can't stand it and think it's, not valid anymore, we see these articles not valid anymore, all of a sudden, if they think they find a little loophole, they go, hey, the Constitution supports the president in raising the debt limit. He doesn't need any authorization from anybody else. He can do it himself. So we're going to talk about that. And first off, I want to talk about Timothy Geithner. Because Timothy Geithner, let me pull it up here, back on, let's see what the date of this was. I'm not sure what the date is. It was, here we go, back on the 30th of June. It was at a briefing with reporters. President Obama was asked about the debt ceiling and the 14th Amendment. Here's what happens. These liberals float this stuff out here. Bloggers write about it, and then you get mainstream news organizations been publishing it like there's some truth to it, and there's not any truth. But I'm going to prove to you right now, Dick, that Timothy Geithner is either a complete moron or he's incompetent, neither of which should be a Secretary of the Treasury. And then we're going to talk some more about the debt ceiling, but this is an interesting aspect that a lot of people go like, well, the 14th Amendment, and I'll read it to you in a second, but the president really didn't want to address that. And, of course, he said, I'm not going to put my constitutional law professor hat on here like he was ever a constitutional law professor. He never was a law professor, and he was a lecturer. And guess what? It was the 14th Amendment, by the way. But it had nothing to do with the debt portion of the 14th Amendment. It had to do with citizenship. So he was a lecturer on one aspect. And, of course, he was wrong, too, in his lectures about his perspective. So his so-called lecturing was really his perspective, which is the liberal perspective, and it was wrong. But in any case, with that said, I'm going to prove to you, Dick, that Timothy Geithner is a complete moron or an outright, flat-out liar. Okay, so or incompetent, too. There's a third one, you know, incompetent. And it's probably a combination of stupid and incompetent, but I'll let you be the judge on this one. So when he was asked about this at a Politico Playbook breakfast on May 25th, he said, I think there's some people who are pretending not to understand who think there's leverage for them in threatening a default. So what we're leading up to here is this default that people keep talking about. I don't understand it as a negotiating position. Well, of course he doesn't, because he's an idiot. But I don't understand it as a negotiating position. I mean, really, think about it. You're going to say that? Can I read you the 14th Amendment? Okay, Mr. Dummy, I'm going to read you the 14th Amendment. What he's trying to say is that the president has the authority under his enumerated powers to ensure that the laws are faithfully executed. And I guess you'd have to say the 14th Amendment is a law. And here's what the law says. Now, I'm going to have to read it twice because there's a bunch of stuff in the middle that really doesn't apply to who gets to enforce this law, et cetera. It just kind of defines what the law is about. But it says, the validity of the public debt, and if you want to follow along with me in the Constitution, it's it's Amendment 14, the 14th Amendment, and if you look at Section 4, of the 14th Amendment, it says, the validity of the public debt of the United States authorized by law, including debts incurred for payment of pensions and bounties for services and suppressing insurrection or rebellion, shall not be questioned. Okay, now a lot of people like to talk, well, that was, it really had to do with the Civil War, and it's true, because the citizenship issue had to do with the Civil War, and actually the Supreme Court, activist Supreme Court ruling that blacks were never intended to hold citizenship. So that's how we needed the 14th Amendment, but this was another issue. But it doesn't even matter. The Civil War doesn't even matter. It doesn't even matter if this is really a valid article. More, I'm going to prove to you that Timothy Geithner thinks this is somehow a loophole. He's a complete idiot. So we're going to take out the middle part that says including debts. We don't need to know that. The validity of the public debt authorized by law shall not be questioned. Dick, what does the term authorized by law mean?
I don't know what they're thinking the definition is.
Well, to you, and any law-abiding citizen, the definition of authorized by law is that somebody, Congress or Senate, proposed a law, it got approved in the Congress and Senate, and then the president signed it. That's the process of creating a law. Okay,
yes.
So Timothy Geithner, and the president, I guarantee you, believes this too, he wouldn't comment on it, but I know that they floated this out there, feel that because he's supposed to ensure that the laws are faithfully executed, if the Congress doesn't raise the debt ceiling, which could lead to our debt being questioned, he can unilaterally raise it. But here's the key. The validity of the public debt authorized by law shall not be questioned. Paula, if the president raises the debt ceiling, will that incur new debt?
Of course it will.
Yes, okay. So the new debt. Now, this new debt would not be authorized by law if the president did it, correct? It wouldn't be authorized by law. It would not go through the law authorizing process.
Right.
Therefore, it could be questioned, which would violate the 14th Amendment. So Timothy Geithner, thinking that there's a loophole for him in the Treasury or the president to raise the debt ceiling without Congress's approval, would violate that amendment. It's not a loophole there. He would be violating it. So that's why he's a complete absolute moron or completely incompetent or lying to the American people. None of those are good signs. But let me go to Section 5. Right after that paragraph, the Congress shall have power to enforce by appropriate legislation the provisions of this article. It doesn't say the Secretary of the Treasury. It doesn't say the President. It doesn't say the Supreme Court. It doesn't say the Senate alone. It says the Congress shall have the power. Okay, now if we go to another part of the Constitution, and most people are somewhat familiar with this, but you know it can be a bit of a snoozer, but if you go to Section 8 under Article 1, powers of Congress to borrow money on the credit of the United States, that's the second power that's listed, to borrow money. Now, Dick, you know this for a fact, that the whole concept of separation of powers is that any of these enumerated powers, like Congress can do this, the president can do that, the judiciary can do this, they're never repeated among the other branch. So, for example, to regulate commerce, to establish a uniform rule of naturalization, to have power to lay and collect taxes, those are all given to Congress. Are they ever repeated in another branch of the government as a power that they also have? No, because it wouldn't work. Each one has separate powers, and there are ways that the other branches can override that or prevent that if there's a problem. So no one branch has all the power, but none of them have the same powers. So if the Congress in two parts of the Constitution says that they have the power to borrow money, and it doesn't say it for the president, and we know that Article 10 10th Amendment says if it doesn't say it, you can't do it. So there's nowhere in the Constitution that says that the president can do any of this. Now, there was a Supreme Court ruling, and this is, again, what the libtards want to use, this Supreme Court ruling that somehow they say does give some leeway to the president. It gives no leeway to the president. First of all, it reinforces that Congress is in charge of raising the debt. It does say that if the debt is about to be defaulted on, that the Secretary of the Treasury, it doesn't actually spell out, says the government, so there's your leeway. Is it the Congress? Is it the executive branch? There's your leeway. Needs to prioritize the debts that it's going to pay off if we're about to hit the ceiling and it hasn't been raised. So it has nothing to do with raising the ceiling. It's just about prioritizing. The government has the authority to prioritize, and it says in that Supreme Court ruling that the top priority will be bondholders. Okay, and finally, it mentions that entitlements do not count as debt. That's what that Supreme Court ruling is, that all the liberals, all the idiots out there want to try and say, oh, this gives the president some leeway. It gives him zero leeway, and in fact, if he tries raising the debt limit on his own, he will violate, not find a loophole in the 14th Amendment, as Timothy Geithner said. So Timothy Geithner doesn't know the Constitution. Timothy Geithner is an incompetent moron. What do you tell me, Dick? What do you think of this? Incompetence? Is he lying to us, or is he a moron?
I think he's a Democrat.
Okay.
I think that covers it all.
That would cover all three of them. Yeah, good job, Dick. Okay. All right. So now let's talk a little bit more about – I'm going to come back to this other article, this article that I'm going to read right now. And I – really, I'm going to have a hard time pronouncing her name. She's French, and she actually is a professor now and an economist, well-known economist, and a professor at, I believe it's George Mason University. Her name is Véronique de Rouget. Now, it looks like Rugie or Ruggie. I think in French it's going to be pronounced Rouget, but I don't know. I don't speak French, so I hope I didn't mess her name up too much. But it's an article that was in the Daily Caller. Let's see. It came out on the 10th. So that would have been yesterday. And she's being asked by one of the interviewers about the debt ceiling. Here's a very interesting thing that she brings up, okay, when a question is asked, so what happens if we don't raise the debt ceiling? She says, well, the assumption behind our potential default in 2 weeks is the fact that first we have to pay off all our bills, everything from bondholders, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, on and on and on. Even like the subsidy to NPR and farm subsidies. But that's an assumption. The assumption is we're stuck having to pay bills and we don't have cash stashed anywhere. First, the Treasury can prioritize and pay our bondholders the interest payments and the principal that's also due. Also, it will have to pay Social Security because as long as there are assets in the trust funds, and there are, these assets have the value of a bond, and I'm assuming that this takes priority over all other things. And yes, it does. That Supreme Court ruling said bonds take priority. But the Treasury also collects money. I mean, it's going to be bringing in revenue during this time period. So, again, it can prioritize. But here's the great news, she says. We can still pay all of our debt because the U.S. has assets it can actually cash to pay for things. For instance, the non-restricted cash that we use to make payments with her colleague, Jason Fitchner, and her put together a conservative, what she calls a conservative list of assets that they could sell. And you know how much that adds up to? $2.4 trillion. Here's some examples. TARP, that's worth about $170 billion. So all the TARP assets that the government owns, sell them. Banks will buy them. And you're talking $170 billion. Let's see. What else? She gives a few more. I'd have to go to the next page. But one of the things that she talks about in this article that caught my eye is, well, first of all, what do you think about that, Paula? $2.4 trillion. We could sell $2.4 trillion of assets to pay for things. I see people every day having yard sales because they got to pay their bills and they're trying to make ends meet. You go on Craigslist. You see person after person after person desperate to sell. They got to sell their flat screen TV. They got to sell this. They got to sell that because they got to make payments. Why is it that the federal government doesn't have to ever sell anything and can just grow and grow and take more of our hard-earned money? What do you think of that, Paula?
Because they're hoarders.
Yeah, because they're bad people. Bad, bad people. What do you think, Dick?
I've got a unique idea. Maybe I'm a little bit daft in my old age, but we have had just about every country in this world that we have helped, and they were supposed to pay us back. And in our graciousness, we always forgave the debt. Why don't we tell the other countries to forgive our debt? We're not going to pay you. Just forgive the debt.
Yep.
That's a good one. Yeah. Yeah.
We've done it all over the world.
Yeah. Well, she and I'm trying to find this as we talk about this. She made a really interesting comment, and I think I'll find it. But we'll come back to that about the debt ceiling. But the other article I'd like to – well, I'm going to have to just go with this one because we're going to waste too much time. But here's what she says. She says – you remember we did a little segment, Paula, on false choices and how the president – and we listed a whole bunch of different false choices where he'll say, listen, we have to choose between, you know, seniors not getting their Social Security and Medicare and little children, you know, being turned away at hospitals or raising the debt ceiling. He comes up with these false choices. It doesn't come down to those things. Remember we did a show on that?
Yes.
Yeah, and that's precisely what she says. And as I'm reading this story, it's like, I don't think that she saw that article. Maybe she did, but she brings up the fact that the Obama administration is offering up false choices, that there's some false choice here that we have to choose between. Well, she points out that his budget that he put out back in February was going to raise the public debt. Now, there are two types of debt we have. We've got public debt, which is about $8 trillion, $8 or $9 trillion, and then we've got private debt. I don't know if it's really you really call it private debt, but it's, you know, people that buy bonds, other countries that buy our bonds and treasuries and things like that. And that is about $5 trillion. So we end up with, you know, about $14.5 trillion in total. But the public debt is right now about $9 trillion. Obama's proposal back in February, over the next 10 years, if we were to implement it, would raise, even by his estimation, would raise the public debt to $18 trillion. Now, can anybody please tell me, if we can't pay off our total debt, our national debt now, and we're struggling, how are we going to pay it off in 2 years, in 10 years, when it's $18 trillion? Can a liberal look me straight in the eyes and say, well, the economy will be better, Tom. We know that for certain because we have a crystal ball, and we'll be able to pay off $18 trillion in 10 years when we can't pay off $9 trillion right now. Can anybody explain to me how that math works?
There's no way it can work.
No.
It's called new math.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It won't work. It cannot work, and it's unsustainable. So the next question then is, and we don't need to get into conspiracy theories, but why would the administration, why would the Democrat Party want to push us in the direction of doubling our public debt up to $18 trillion over the next 10 years when it's completely unsustainable? It doesn't work. The math doesn't work. Why would they do that? Paula, any idea why Democrats would think that's a good idea?
You know what? To be honest with you, I don't have an answer to that. I think they think it's going to work in their favor. I don't have an answer to that.
Yeah, I don't know, unless they want to ultimately destroy our economy and then, you know, have everybody in the country have to rely on the government. And then, you know, that's when we look like Venezuela or Cuba or Bolivia, where you'll have elites, you'll have some rich people, and then everybody else will be the same. I mean, is that their vision of utopia? I think, here's what I think it is, and I've said this on the show before, but I think it's just like the person who sells their soul to the devil. They know what they want right now, right now, right today. They don't care whether it's going to actually work on down the road. They know what they want, and they want it today. And so they will sell their soul. Democrats and liberals in this country are willing to sell the soul of this country to get some things, like, you know, Obamacare, or saving the planet by basically shutting our homes down and taking all energy away from us so that we can't destroy the planet. I mean, they think that somehow they're going to save the planet and give everybody health care. They don't care if it'll actually work. They just want to pass it in a law, make it happen, and if it doesn't work, well, we'll adjust. And so,
right.
And the problem that we're seeing right now with a liberal, when we had a liberal Congress and Senate and president, is they're doing things that they have no constitutional authority to do. They're stretching the Constitution to come up with an excuse to do some of these things. And here's what happens. The government was never structured to handle all of these social, we'll call them social entitlement issues. They weren't set up to do that. So what happens is it's like telling a lie. Now, it's a little different concept, but it's a similar concept. You know, the wicked web we weave. You tell one lie, and pretty soon you have to tell another to cover that one, and it just starts growing and growing and growing. That's what happens when government gets involved with trying to manage our lives, the economy, and everything about it. It doesn't do such a good job, so then it has to pass more regulation and more laws to kind of make up for that and make up for that. So that's precisely why the government has gotten so big. It has to keep trying to fix all of its deficiencies by growing, and it never works. And so, but it's a self-perpetuating thing. It has to just keep going bigger and bigger and bigger and more of our money until this house of cards collapses and crashes on down. And then they want to be there ready to say, you know what, it's capitalism, doesn't work, it's all capitalism's fault, and but we'll save you. We'll set up a new socialistic country that will work, just like all those great socialistic countries that work in Europe and South America. Yeah, perfect. You know,
Where are they going to get the money from to set this up?
Well, they're just going to keep taking our money till there is no money left, and then it'll all collapse. Thomas Jefferson really believed, and I don't think he was. Just tell me if this sounds kind of like the way people feel today. People feel about one party or the other. Thomas Jefferson believed that both George Washington in his second term and then John Adams wanted to create disasters, problems in the economy and the government, and raise the debt to the point where it was unsustainable. And it was a very new, you know, nation, a very new country with a very new constitution. So they felt like if we can sort of destroy this quickly, since we don't really like the way it's working out, we can build up a monarchy on the ashes of this destroyed economy and country. And that's what he felt was going on. Now, was it or not? It doesn't matter. But a lot of people today that I talk with feel the same things going on. You've got liberals hell-bent on destroying a system that has worked for a long time and worked well, that we all want and we all believe in. They want to destroy it so they can build up their version of a monarchy on the ruins of the Constitution and our separation of powers representative government. That's what's going on. I don't think too many liberals think that way. I talk with a lot of liberals that are very short-sighted. They talk, but Tom, don't you want to? You don't want to give amnesty to some poor 16-year-old boy that's been here since he was 8 and his parents illegally brought him? How cruel could you be, Tom? You don't want everybody to have health care? You know what? I want everybody to be 6'5" and in perfect health and be a millionaire. That's what I want. But you can't make it happen. But what you can do is leave me alone and allow me to have my liberty and property and leave me alone. You can do that, and that's very easy to do. But they don't want to do that. They got to meddle, meddle, meddle. And so that's that wicked web we weave, not lying. It's just people cannot control every aspect of life. And in order to attempt to do that, you've got to steal our liberty to do that. So, all right, there's my ramble.
Can I travel back in a time machine for a second?
Yeah.
Let's go back to the 1950s. When I was a young bean sprout, all of the families had health insurance, and the government didn't sponsor it in any way, shape, or form. They went out and bought it from an insurance company, or it was provided through their employer. It was one of their benefits. Now, all of a sudden, our government has to control our health care. Our whole country had health care before in the 50s. What happened to it?
Yeah. Well, you know, they're going to say that it's the evil, greedy companies that have, caused prices to go up to where a lot of people can't afford it. No, really, it's the government getting involved with Medicare that has forced prices. If you talk to any doctor, Medicare is what's driving the pricing of health care in our nation today. That's precisely what. And so it's the government meddling and getting involved. In reality, what the government should have done back then when it started to see that maybe we have some people that could use some help with health care was simply to tax us a little bit more, in whatever way they want to tax us, because they have the authority to do that, and then buy on the open market insurance for those people that need it, that truly, truly need it. But see, that's not what government wants to do. That doesn't really give government control. That just is providing for the – that would actually be providing specific welfare, and I'm opposed to that. But you could say that would be providing the general welfare, and the general welfare clause, if you want to even call it a clause, tied into the taxing statement, means that the federal government can tax us to provide for things. That's it. They can't control those things. They can't control those industries, and that's where they've gone. And so the problem is, what are they going to control next? Well, they're going to try and control everything. And, Dick, you brought up earlier about the smart meters. We'll talk about that in just a little bit. But in any case, let's keep talking about the debt limit here for a little bit longer. Now, I have this great article that this young lady wrote, and it's going to be on the show on Thursday, called It's Not the Entitlements, It's the Discretionary Spending. And it's a theme of something, Paula, you know, that I'm always talking about, but I want to cover this just a little bit. Here's how it starts off. She says, I'm going to make a statement many will find startling, and it has to be established with a bluntness that renders it incomplete if we are to understand the issue. Entitlements are not the problem for the federal debt in 2011. Now, calm down. Entitlements are a debt problem, but they are not the reason the federal debt has increased 35% under Obama. I'll say that again. Entitlements are not the reason the federal debt has increased 35% under Obama. Obama has not added dramatically to our national debt by putting new money into Social Security and Medicare. In fact, he took half a trillion out of Medicare, right, with Obamacare. His half-trillion deficit fest has not pumped cash into Social Security and Medicare. And let's see. She goes, do I need to put this in three or four more ways in order to get the point across? Entitlements are a systematic long-term debt problem, but they are not what has caused the national debt to spiral from 2009 to 2011. It's all the Obama spending on other things, not on the two user contribution entitlement programs that America's seniors now rely on. That has caused the debt skyrocket. It's all the other things he's been spending on. Let's see. She quotes Ed Morris in Hot Air for I think the day before, in saying that had spending increased at a rate of inflation from 2001 forward, we would probably not be in a deficit at all. Had it stayed the rate of inflation from 2006 forward, we'd probably be looking at historically average deficits in terms of GDP. And I've got a chart right here that shows the deficit in relation to GDP at 3.5% in 2003 to 2004, and then it starts going down. Yes, during the Bush years, the deficit as a percentage of GDP continues down to a historic, a very, very low 1.2%, which is below the 2.6% average since we've been tracking this. So for 40 or 50 years, okay? And by 2009, though, so 2007, Democrats take control of the Congress, and, of course, President Obama was elected in 2008. It goes from 1.2% of GDP up to 8.3%. That's the skyrocketing right there. There were no spiraling deficits, as the president lied to us about when he was talking about the Bush era. The spiraling deficits are right now. He's creating them. So she goes on to say the historically average deficits were bad enough, but in the context of historic trends in GDP, they warranted a deliberate, gradual approach to bringing them down. And that's what was happening under George Bush until the Democrats got in charge. The legacy of 4 years of a Democratic Congress, 2007 to 11, however, two of them under Barack Obama, is a discretionary spending spree that does induce panic. That's, you know, part of the problem. So in any case, if you want to read more about this, I highly recommend it. We'll have J.E. Dyer on the show on Thursday to talk about this. If you want to read the article, you can go to hotair.com. It was put on there, let's see, on July 8th. You can also just Google her, or it's on her website. Go to her website, The Optimistic Conservative. Google that. Check that out, The Optimistic Conservative, J.E. Dyer. She'll be on the show on Thursday. So any comments from you guys?
No, I think you've covered it fantastic. It's unbelievable what they think they're – how do I say this? I'm not saying it right. They're trying to make us believe they're helping us.
Yeah.
They're not helping us. They're taking us down the path of ruin, and they're doing everything against the Constitution that they possibly can. They don't believe in our Constitution. It's like you said before, it's outdated.
Yeah.
It doesn't apply to us anymore.
Yeah. Well, here's back to Veronique, the French economist. She's a U.S. economist, but she's from France. And the interviewer says, is there a false dichotomy between raising the debt ceiling and instant default? So this goes back to our show, Paula, where we did the false choices that Obama likes to always present. She said, yeah, it's a false dichotomy to say that if we don't raise the debt ceiling, we're going to go into default, because it assumes that, first, we don't have the ability to prioritize our payments, and more importantly, that we don't have other assets that we can use to pay our bills. So it's a false choice. We do not have to go into debt. Of course, most Americans wouldn't understand this stuff, and most of us for a long time probably haven't cared about this stuff. But the reality is now we have an administration telling us and an entire party telling us that we're going to go into default when that's not one of the choices. It may be their choice, but it's not an appropriate choice. So they're lying to us, essentially. And Republicans are trying to tell us, no, we don't have to go into default, and they've told us that we can prioritize. Now, his next question is, how long do you think we have realistically before we have to raise the debt ceiling? And this is really important, Paula, because we've talked about this many times on the show. She said, it's hard to tell. I don't know exactly how long we can go, but it may be until the end of the fiscal year. So in other words, not that long, really just a few months. But she says, but we do have time. That gives us plenty of time. And we can pay our debts and prioritize things, but the debt ceiling is going to have to be raised. And you know why it's going to have to be raised, Paula, she says? Because nobody has put forward a bill that starts reducing our debt. They only reduce the rate at which we're going into debt. We've talked about this many, many times. And that's where this economist says we will have to raise the debt ceiling, because nobody, Republicans or Democrats, have put forward a bill or a proposal that reduces the national debt. So it will have to go up. And I know that we've talked about that many times. Have you seen anything, Paula? Have you seen anybody even talk about cutting the national debt?
Not that I'm aware of, no. More.
I've heard our Speaker of the House do an awful lot of crying about it.
Yes.
But the general feeling is he's going to cave in and give the president what he wants.
Right.
I was on the Ed Dean Show, by the way, today at 3, and a good friend of mine broadcasts out of Melbourne, Florida. And we talked about the debt ceiling for the most of the show, and we talked about some of these very things. But Ed Dean, great show. He broadcasts from 2 to 4 Monday through Friday. You can go to Ed Dean Show, Ed Dean Radio, eddeanradio.com. And I believe you can download his past archive stuff. And, of course, I was there today for about half an hour. We talked a little bit about illegal immigration as well. Now, the economist here, Veronica, she gets into gets questioned by the interviewer here about the Obama administration working off an economic model that is far more Keynesian than you might prefer. But, for example, Paul Krugman believes that the government should be spending even more money to get us out of this recession. And we're going to tie this into the Depression. Okay, she says, well, I would say that we've tried spending a lot of money to jumpstart the economy, and obviously it hasn't worked. Except now we've been saddled with a lot of debt. And I really don't see why we're doing more of the same thing that hasn't worked. It just doesn't seem like a good idea. So here's an economist saying, we've spent a lot of money, it hasn't worked, and now we just have a bunch of debt. So I'm going to go to a quote that I know you both have heard me say on many occasions, and that is from Henry Morgenthau. He was the Secretary of the Treasury under FDR and during the Depression. And this was released from his diary some years later. But in his diary at the time, he, and this was toward the end of the FDR, 8 years of the FDR administration, the first 8 years. He said, "We have tried spending money. We are spending more money than ever before, and it does not work." Okay, wow. So history shows us that it doesn't work. It didn't work in the Great Depression. Let's see. He goes on to say, unemployment is just as high as when we started. And I tell you, after 8 years of this administration, we've never delivered on our promises, and now we have an enormous debt to boot. Wow. That's just – so when I read that economist saying that, I don't know if she knows the history of the Depression and she knows that the Secretary of Treasury made those statements. But she just made those statements for us. Here it is, you know, how many – 60 years later, actually we're talking 70, 80, 90 years later almost. She's making these statements that are identical to the Secretary of the Treasury back then. We have a Secretary of the Treasury today who doesn't know history, who doesn't understand the Constitution, we've proven that, and an administration that wants to repeat the same mistakes as FDR did in the Great Depression. What do you think of that, Dick? Uh-oh. Is Dick gone? Or am I gone?
He's still there.
Okay. Dick fell asleep. That's okay. But so, you know, we did a whole thing on the Great Depression, Paula. And when I read that, I mean, did that sound really familiar to you? Her saying that, you know, well, we spent a lot of money and it obviously didn't work. I don't think we should keep doing it. And all we do now is have a big debt on top of not working. And she didn't mention anything about unemployment, but that sounds just like what we talked about on our Depression show.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, so it's anyway, so let's see what else Veronique had to say. Let's see. But one of the important points she makes is, yes, the debt ceiling will have to go up because nobody's proposing to reduce the debt. That's and that's what I've been complaining about, and we've been talking about is somebody has got to start talking about reducing our debt, and that's where the article from Ms. Dyer comes in, talking about we need to start with the federal government. Remember, I said to you, Paula, some time ago, the Republicans. And I said this back when I was, you know, a couple of years ago. Republicans need to jump on top of the federal government. There's $1.3 trillion a year, non-military, non-Social Security, non-Medicare, non-Medicaid, right there that they could start cutting at. And I just saw, what's her name? She was just on Marsha Blackburn. I don't want to get the wrong representative, but she had proposed an across-the-board, non-security, non-military, 5% cut to spending, and it didn't pass in the House, and there were a lot of Republicans who voted against it. They said, well, you can't just take an axe to this stuff. Yeah, if you're fighting a monster anaconda that's, you know, 4 feet thick and 100 feet long, you need an axe, or it's just going to squish you, and that's what we've got here with this, with our debt problem and the size of the federal government. We've got this huge anaconda that we need an axe and a chainsaw, but they want to take a scalpel and then slice a few little, scales off of it and think that somehow, you know, that's going to fix our debt problem. I really just think they're kicking the can down the road, Paula, and just want to slough it off on somebody else. Claim they've made a victory. Claim, like we did with the extension of the budget, there was no budget, but the extension of the non-Democrat budget from last year, or for this year, but they should have done it last year, the extension of that budget where Boehner, you know, claimed, oh, it's going to be $100 billion we're going to cut. Now it's 60, now it's 30. Then it turned out to be like a few hundred million, or 30 million, I think, is what it ended up being. I mean, it was nothing close to that. So it wasn't even a drop in the bucket. It's something you couldn't even measure compared to where our debt is. And so I don't know. Does it seem like they're just kicking the can down the road for somebody else to handle, some other generation, Paula?
That's the impression that I'm getting as time is moving on, which it's moving on slowly, but that is the impression that I'm getting. It's just let's let somebody else deal with it. I just don't like what I'm hearing and what I'm seeing.
What I'm seeing, when you have a person running for office, they make all these promises, and then once they get in, they forget all the promises they made, and everything is status quo. Let's keep going the way we are. We don't make changes. We don't rock the boat.
Yeah.
They all talk about the problems we've got, but none of them solve the problems when they get there.
Yeah, exactly. I just honestly don't get it. And I really do think, I predicted on Ed Dean's show today that the Republicans are going to cave in on this and cut a deal that really doesn't help us out any, raises the debt ceiling. And here's an interesting angle I took on this that I think you may agree with me on this, Dick. When the Congress decided to slap Obama on the wrist over Libya and say, this is unconstitutional and you shouldn't be there, but then could not pass the bill that took funding away from him. Because this was in the words, I think, of John Boehner, that, well, we don't agree with being in Libya. We don't think the president has authority to go there. But we can't just cut the funding off because we have allies there that are counting on us in NATO. And it wouldn't look good. It wouldn't look good to the rest of the world. Well, I've predicted this. Now this is Obama's mindset from now on. Wow, I'll do whatever I want. Congress will say, but you can't do it. You don't have authority. I'll do it anyway. And then they'll go, well, we can't cut off funding to the president or to that department or whatever it is he's done this time because it'll make us look bad. And people are counting on it. So he's just going to keep doing stuff. Can you imagine if one of your kids, you said to him, don't do that, then the kid does it and says, well, boy, if I spanked my kid or I gave him a timeout or restricted him, it'd make him look bad to his friends, so I'll just let it slide. Then your kid's going to start doing all kinds of stuff. And that's what Obama is. He's not much smarter than a six-year-old kid, so he's just going to start going after everything. Debt ceiling, if it doesn't pass, he's just going to tell Geithner, start writing blank, rubber checks. I don't care. Because what will happen if he unilaterally raises the debt ceiling and says to Tim Geithner, Tim the idiot Geithner, hey, go ahead and raise the debt ceiling. We'll just say it's the 14th Amendment. And the Congress say, but that's a violation of the Constitution. You don't have authority to do it. But now that you've written those checks, we can't just let them bounce. We're going to have to, come up with the money to cover those checks that you've just written. That's what he's going to do. So you can name almost anything he wants to do, like whether it be the DREAM Act, with illegal immigration. He's going to say, hey, all illegal immigrants I'm giving amnesty to, giving them. But you don't have authority to do that. I don't care. And then as soon as he does it, what's the Congress going to say? Well, geez, we can't stop it. How do you stop that? All right. They're fucking – I'm sorry. Excuse my language.
If you look back at Bonner before he became Speaker of the House, he was talking awful big, powerful, strong, and the tune has changed a little bit now that he's the speaker and has control.
Yeah.
There was a comedian back when I was younger. Name was Red Buttons, and he had a famous saying about people like him, and it covers an awful lot of our politicians. Heap big smoke, but no fire.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. I'm really disappointed. So all it means is we got to double our efforts, get more new Republicans in, get rid of guys like Boehner. I was all for getting rid of the Deadwood and these career politicians anyway. So whether people like him or not, he's been there too long. I want to get rid of all of them that have been there too long. We need fresh faces, smart people in there. You look at guys like Alan West, he's saying the right things and doing them. You look at a guy like Marco Rubio, saying the right things and doing them. Now, maybe 10 years from now, if they're still there, they might not be. Maybe they get used to that environment. So that may be part of the problem, but I want
to
get rid of it.
We have to have term limits.
Yeah. That is definitely something's going to happen. So your prediction, Dick, on what's going to happen with the debt ceiling and how much in real cuts are they really going to make, and are taxes going to go up?
Taxes are going to go up. The value of everything we've got is going to go down. They're not going to really cut anything. They may, like you said, use a scalpel and take a few nicks here and there, but it's not even going to amount to a drop of water in a bucket.
Well, there's a term for the kind of cuts that they made under Boehner's leadership and that I believe they're going to make here, and it eludes me right now, but it's cuts that really were going to happen anyway, or programs that weren't going to be funded anymore. They're going to count them as cuts. Like, let's say there's some kind of after-school program that the federal government was funding, and they've decided that, well, there's another after-school program that we'll fund instead, so we don't need this first after-school program that, let's say, maybe was costing $100 million across the country. Well, it was already going to go away, but they'll count that as a cut. That's what they're going to do. So my prediction, real actual cuts, they've been trying to talk about $2.5 trillion, then it's down to $1.5 trillion. I'm going to bet that the actual real cuts, not of things that are already going to go away, but actual real cuts are going to be less than $500 billion. I'm predicting more like about $100 billion. The real, when people start digging into it and looking at the actual cuts that are going to come out of this bill, then it's going to be, my prediction is less than $100 billion. That's what the truth is going to be. My other prediction is taxes are going to go up because we got to punish the rich folks. And I know there are plenty of people out there say, well, they can afford it. I don't care if they can afford it or not. It's immoral. It's immoral to tax one person at a higher rate than other people. Absolutely immoral. And we've already done a whole show on that. I'm not going to get into that, but it's immoral. Okay, but taxes are going to go up. And it's going to hurt industries like the jet industry. Oh, you know, the private jet owners. Look, they can afford to go buy private jets, and there were some tax cuts that were involved in that so that they could actually afford to buy jets, or it was enticing for them to buy jets. There's a whole industry there that builds private jets and outfits them and refits them and retrofits them and services them in our country. It's going to kill jobs. So cutting taxes kills jobs, especially when you affect an industry like that. And that was an industry that the Obama administration specifically wanted to target with tax cuts because they wanted to stimulate it in the stimulus. So there were tax cuts. The stimulus wasn't just, here's money, we're going to start spreading around. There were actual tax cuts that were involved in that. And that was one that he authorized to stimulate that industry. Now he's going to put his foot back on the throat of that industry. Doesn't make any sense at all. That's because they really don't care about jobs. And so my other prediction is, and then we'll let Paula make her prediction, and then we'll wrap this up. But my other prediction is, once this is done, he's going to go like, see, I helped him get it done. Until I got in there and rolled my sleeves up, they couldn't come, and I helped them come to a solution, and it's a good solution. He's going to talk about how great it is. It's going to be crappy, but he's going to talk about how great it is. And then he's going to immediately move on to working on illegal immigration. When our economy is still in a, I would call it a depression, unemployment has just gone up to 9.2%, he's going to focus like a laser beam on recruiting more Democrats. That's what he's going to do. He's in campaign mode. He doesn't care about the economy. He doesn't care about you and me. And that's what he's going to do. So those are my predictions. What do you predict, Paula?
Well, I feel the same way that you guys feel. It's just going to be a concentration on what's in it for him and forget about everything else and forget about everybody else.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll see what happens in the next few days or even week and see if our predictions come true on the debt ceiling and taxes going up and minimalistic cuts to the size of the federal government.
Before you leave taxes, I have a question.
Go ahead.
What do they consider the rich? They're going to raise the taxes on the rich. The rich have so many attorneys that find loopholes, you're not going to raise their taxes.
Well, yeah, we just saw that General Electric didn't pay any taxes because of all the loopholes. Well, then they're going to say, well, we want to close loopholes. Oh, you want to close loopholes. You know the loopholes they want to close? The ones that you and I can use, Dick. The ones that benefit us, the non-rich.
Right.
Like a home mortgage deduction. There are people I know that just hate those deductions. Okay, let's eliminate the deductions to simplify the tax code, but then lower my tax rate commensurate mm-hmm. with that. No, they're not going to do that. So they're going to find all kinds of ways to soak the middle class. You cannot – it is not possible to tax just the rich even at 100% and even start making a dent in just the ongoing deficit, the annual deficit, let alone the national debt. The only way – to start making a dent in that without shrinking the size of the government and reforming entitlement programs. And yes, I'm all about, we're going to have to be some changes made in the military, but smart changes, and I know how to make, I've done that in the past. I know how that can work. But without those kind of changes, the only way to do it is going to be to take more and more of our money, Dick and Paula. They're going to tax us more and more. So I would see us getting past – once Obama's a second-term president, if he gets there, which I predict he will not, but if he were to, he will gladly raise taxes on the middle class. He promised he wouldn't. He can break all the promises he wants then because he won't ever be running for election again. So I guarantee you if he gets reelected, middle-class income taxes are going up, and they're going to go up significantly. And he's just going to go like, hey, it's just not fair. Look at all these other countries around the world and how high their taxes are in the middle class there. You guys are getting away. You guys are getting away with something here in America with low taxes. Your taxes are just going to have to go up. You're going to have to share a little more pain. This guy never shares any pain with anybody and just inflicts it on everybody else. And so that's my other prediction. We cannot allow him to get reelected because taxes will go up significantly. But we're going to see the middle class hit hard by deals that are cut to, quote, simplify the tax system. That's just code for you and me paying more taxes in one way or another. There's a lot of ways to skin a cat, and your income tax is not the only way for them to get money from us.
Well, before you jump on to the next thing, I got to jump off, Tom and Dick. I apologize.
That's okay. Well, we're about at the end of the show here anyway, so we're going to wrap it up. Paula, we'll see you on Wednesday. Big show on Wednesday. Dick, thanks for calling in. We'll see you again on Wednesday also, I believe, Dick. And we've got a bunch of guests lined up for Wednesday. Don't miss it. And
Let me make a far-out prediction before we sign off.
Yes, please do.
I'm going to get going, guys.
See you, Paula.
Okay, bye, Paula.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. Before the next election, the Democrats will have their get-together. They will see that there's no way they can get Obama reelected. They are going to nominate Hillary Clinton.
Well, I've predicted that, too, in the past. We'll see if that happens. They are very desperate now. The one prediction that I've been making, and it's been coming true, is they're going to lie every time they talk. Every time this president speaks, every time Geithner speaks, anybody in his administration speaks, they lie. They have to lie. They cannot stand on the truth. They cannot stand on their record. They cannot stand on truth. They will lie. You're just going to see nothing but lies coming out of these guys every single time they talk. Yep.
Exactly.
So, I think that's a prediction I've already made, and we've already seen it coming true. So, it's only going to get worse.
They're going to feel that they can't get Obama reelected, and they've got to make a choice. Yeah. They want to keep the presidency. You know, the only choice they have is Hillary Clinton.
Well, if they do that, I think it would be a game changer, especially if his numbers are really looking bad. Do you know when the Democrat National Convention is, Dick?
No, I don't.
Okay. Well, we'll find that out, talk about that on the next show, and see. We'll have a countdown to the Hillary nomination based on when their nomination process is going to take off.
Yes.
So, yeah, I don't know that she would even need to campaign much, at least not in a primary leading up to that, to take him out. It'll just, they'll float it out there, and then it'll start to become the rumor, and she'll deny it. Oh, no. But people start thinking about it, and what you'll see is people in the liberal media will go, you know, she'd make a great candidate. I mean, you know, Obama, he just hasn't really performed, and, you know, if her name were suddenly thrown out there, she might actually just win without any campaigning. That's what they'll start saying. You watch, watch and see. You're right about that, and that's exactly how it'll play out if it does. So, in any case... All right, Dick. Well, thanks for coming on the show today. We'll see you again on Wednesday. And thank everybody else for listening. Take care.
Yeah, have a good day. Bye-bye.
You're listening to the American Hour with Commander Tom Garcia on the USA Talk Radio Network.